So I heard I heard of a guy who just looked at the world. He said, "Stop the world! I want to get off." And so he joined a monastery, convent, and he gets in there, and then he finds out, because he didn't do his homework. They said this is a place where you have to take a vow of silence. So he was only allotted 2 words every year. So at the end of the first year, saying no words, he finally got a chance to speak. So he said, "Bed hard." At the end of the second year, he says, "Sanctuary cold." At the end of the third year, he said, "Food bad." At the end of the fourth year, he said, "I quit." To which the head of the monastery said, "It's about time. All you've been doing is complaining ever since you got here." I feel like when we talk about the church, that's what we do. We complain, 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 complain. Because there's a lot to complain about, because we're a bunch of people who have issues. And when we all come together, we do stupid things. I love how Chuck Swindoll said, "It seems like the only group of people that shoot their wounded are the Christians, and they seem to put their firing squad in a circle." And I'm like, I hate that there's a little bit of truth to that. But you're not going to hear, during our short time together, you're not going to hear me complain about the church. In fact, I want to give you hope. I know we could spend the entire hour just saying, "I wish the church would do this, that. Well, whatever you focus on is what you end up getting. I had a friend who actually was a speed skater in the Olympics, and he was the guy, you know, those ones that, real speed skaters that go right around that sharp turn like that. And I asked him, "How do you not fall?" And he said, "I always fall when I look at the wall." But when you look at your next spot, your next turn, you won't fall because you go where you're looking. That was a major turning point for me. This was like 15 years ago. And I started thinking, why do I always seem to look? It's sort of like if I were to draw it like this and say, "Hey, okay, show, what do you see right here?" That's not real bright. But what do you guys see right here? You know, what do you guys see? You see a fly? Maybe the letter Y? A distant point. You just see a distant point off in the distance? Absolutely. A wasp? But my point is this. Why don't you see all of the white, right? You go toward whatever you look at, you know, and so you take this way, you realize all the potential. That's how I feel about the church. I see amazing potential because it's the only entity that will last into all eternity. And so there's something really good about it. There's something worth dying for. Jesus showed us that. And so I want to get into that as we go. I want to show you some numbers that really fundamentally changed and helped heal some of my heart. In the early days of ministry, like 20 years ago for me, I was in a church of 80 people in the middle of Michigan called Carson City. I don't know if any of you have heard of Carson City. It is 1,200 people in the town. There's 12 churches, so we all have dibs on 100 people each. It's that kind of a small town, right? Well, when I got there, we had 80 people. And then as I continued on in ministry there, we actually grew to 500. So I was the Grand Marshal of the parade 1 year, Citizen of the Year 1 year, you know, because you become, I mean, pretty big in a small town like that. Well, after I left, what do you think happened? Whew, it shrank like crazy. Well, it's because I failed to lead well. And then I finally read a study that helped solve the dilemma of my heart, because I said, I never want to feel that kind of pain again to watch these people come to Christ. And then I had a pastor that came in that followed me who had the exact opposite philosophy and ministry that I did. And I'll explain my philosophy as we go here. We'll come back to that. But then I read a study that helped set me free. And for the past 10 years, I've been living out what I'm going to talk about with you today. In 1776, how many of you are Methodist? United Methodist, maybe half of you. Okay, this is a study that was not done by Methodists. It was done by a group of sociologists. In 1776, when our country was founded, there were 65 Methodist congregations in the country. 65. That was 2.5% of the population. So one and roughly 50 people were Methodist. One in 48 people were Methodist. In 1850, get this number, There were 13,305 registered congregations that were Methodist. In that roughly 74 years of ministry, we went from 65 to 13,305. Imagine in that day being a leader in the church. You could sneeze and a church would come out. I mean, it would have been so much fun to be a pastor during that time. That worked out to 34.2% of the country was Methodist. We went from 1 in 50 to 70 years later, 1 in 3 people were Methodist. And we've been shrinking ever since, if you're Methodist. And mainline denominations have been shrinking as well. So two sociologists out of Penn State asked the question, why? Why did these people grow so dramatically? And then what did they do that made them shrink forever since, to this day? And when I got into the Methodist Church 20 years ago, I actually remember my first annual conference when all the pastors gathered and lay people gathered. And one of the leaders got up, and I knew I was in trouble when he said this, "Good news, we lost less people this year than we did last year." I'm like, what? You're bragging on the fact that we're still losing people, but we lost less people. And it's like, what are we into? Well, it's this decline, and I know exactly why it happened. These researchers, Roger Fink, if you want to do some research for yourself, out of Penn State, he asked with his assistant, he asked the question, why? And he wasn't even Methodist. He just wanted to know about these people. You know what their answer was? He said, in 1850, the General Conference voted. And they voted to say, we are no longer allowing the laity to have pastoral influence over congregations. Only people appointed by the episcopacy can lead the congregation. What did I just say? I am the problem. Melody is the problem. And so when I read this and I went before the Lord on it, I was forever changed. And God said, then don't be the problem. So I repented before the congregation and I said, here's what I need to apologize about. Some of you have deep, deep callings on your life. And you're very creative in the workplace. You may run major organizations, but then you come into the church and we say, here, hand out bulletins. Here, make coffee. And they take all of their creativity and use it to build their kingdom that doesn't last. They retire, some new hotshot comes in and changes the whole organization anyway, and now they're depressed. When in fact, why would we not allow creativity to birth up? We became a movement, the likes of which this world hasn't, this country has not seen since, in some ways, if you will, especially from the Methodist standpoint. 1 in 3 people were Methodist, and then we've been shrinking ever since in influence. And that would speak for any denomination, frankly, even non-denominational movement. So from that point on, I've gone on the quest to say, how can I get out of the way and inspire the laity to rise up so we can tap into the way it was supposed to be in the first place? Because Ephesians 4 says, my job, the apostle, the prophet, the evangelist, the shepherd, or the teacher, the leaders of the church, it's our job, what's it say? To equip, to lift up the saints, the people of God. To do what? To do the work of the ministry. For what purpose? To bring unification to the church. But we've done the exact opposite. We've said, oh, cute layperson, I'm the one who went to seminary. I'm the one who's educated. Why don't you just get out of the way? Since 1850, I have authority to do this over you. But we've had a movement happen ever since in the early days of ministry, at least in this modern era, if you will. But the church has always been a lay-led movement. God has always said, I'm going to give every single person who follows me a calling. And so I want to teach you briefly here some processes that I've implemented in my ministry that hopefully you could maybe implement in your personal life and then maybe implement into other people's lives around your church so that we can turn the tide back to a movement. Because here's the deal. Our country is going like this. I'll keep this here. Hopefully you can see it like this. So let's say your church is growing, but it's probably growing at a kind of a slower rate. But you know this is true. The culture is growing at an exponential rate. And I would say there's very, very, very few churches in their community keeping up with the change in their culture. What we call this is the gospel gap. There's the gospel gap that is keeping us from being influential in this world. And I'm telling you what, during this day, in the 1850s, we were a major influence on the world in which we lived. And we've lost it. And I want to get it back. And so that's what I've made as my quest, to inspire any lay person that I can, to especially inspire clergy, to get out of the way and to lift up and to equip the saints for ministry. So what we're going to do is I'm going to take you through just a few things. We're going to fill in some blanks here. If you got a handout, there's handouts right over here. Did anybody not get one? I want to make sure you have those. And there's some pens as well, hopefully. Great. Okay. So we'll go through these kind of rapid fire. We're going to do three things. I'm going to help you to identify people who could tap into this kind of paradigm here. This is my focus. Are we all set? Got everything? Okay. Well, I'm already drying up here. Okay. All set? Or we need more pens? I've got one more here. Okay. This is going for $15. $15. Anybody? $15. 16. We got 16. Anybody need it for real?
For real.
Yeah, okay, here you go. Here you go. Great. Okay.
For sure. The things that our church is, you know, there's definitely a greater focus on the laity, without a doubt.
Good.
But there isn't necessarily the fervor that you bring.
Okay.
So
that's your next step then.
Yeah, I think that's the part that our congregation needs to bring.
Then what we're going to get into will give some of that fervor. Okay. I'm positive. I've been doing this now for 10 years, and I've seen nothing but light bulbs go off. And as we're waiting for a couple more pens, I'll say this. I heard a wonderful quote that Mark Twain gets credit for, but I've since debunked it. We don't know who said it, but Twain gets lots of credit for lots of things. But it's this: the two most important days in a person's life, the day they were born, of course, and the day they found out why. Ooh, that's good. And as a believer, I would say